Okay, so good morning, everybody. We are continuing on our studies of Ervin. We are now on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Bet. I'm going to start with the Mishnah simply because it'll make everything a lot more understandable. So we're going to start with that, and then we're going to get to the jump ahead to the Gemara on the bottom of the Daf. Hopefully, that'll be understandable for everybody. If it's not, let me know. So we're talking about a case of. Again, if you put the Erev in a place, it's inaccessible. So Tanova Migdal, Bavad, Hamafteach, Harez Erev. If you left your Erev in a cupboard and you lost the key, Misha says that this is a fine Erev. Realizer Omeri Mino Dash Maftah Kamo and Erev. But Realizer says no, you have to know where the key is. If not, it's not a good Erev at all. So that's a problem that if it's locked away, you know, not gonna work very well. Okay, so now it's jumping down towards the bottom of the page. So we are trying to talk about, we're trying to figure out, the Gemara brought other statements about whether when it's lost versus not lost, when is it good, when isn't it good. We're trying to figure out what exactly does that mean, right? When is it considered to be good versus not good? So the part where it says, Ihaki haina dekani ale, Rabbi Elazar omer, im ba'ir avad, so that was, we stated that the Mishnah was only referring to Hayom Tov. So then the question is, what do we, that by the kids of words slightly accessible. So what is the case? Rather, we're talking about a case where we're differentiating between losing it in the city versus in the field. But the question then is that, so How does the location help us? So what's the difference whether you're in the city or not in the city? The difference is error. Right? You should have just been on your way. So that's what's the difference, right?
Sorry, Rabbi, we're not hearing you very clearly.
Either it's accessible or it's not accessible, right? So which one is it, right? So, Ibi Yom Tov, Mali Ir, Mali Sada, right? If it's on Yom Tov, who cares? Either it's in the city or not. Like, my accessibility is the same. So, the Zuri Master of Hunting Time, let's explain this again, because we definitely missed something. So, well, there were some missing words that had allowed this statement to make a lot more sense. So, Tanava Migdal, Bena'al Mufanav, Bavad Matash, Rei Zeru. So, you placed it in the cupboard, and you locked it, and then you lost the key. That's fine. Right? So, This is when the ultimate you did. So, when do we say that's okay that you can't donate the key? Yom Tov. On Yom Tov. Because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to, as you see in the diagram there, see this brick. You're allowed to basically destroy it in order to access the contents. So on Yom Tov, that's fine, and therefore you'd be allowed to do so. But on Shabbos, you would not be allowed to do that type of distraction, and in or over, but it wouldn't work. In Samavteach, Bein Ba'ir, Bein Basadah, Ein Ovayru. If the key has been found, then the Erev is no longer valid. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Ba'ir, Ein Ovayru, Basadah, Ein Ovayru. So it was found in a city, that his Erev is valid, because that means that it was always successful, but if it's later found outside of the field, then it's no good, because that means that there is no proper way for you to have accessed the Migdal on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. The question being, as in, not that you have to have had the key, but you could have found the key. And if it's outside the Tum, there's no way. Right? But Yerub Oerub. Why do we say that if you find it inside the city, it's your Erev is in Erev? Kirby Shimon. Kirby Shimon says, Damar Echad Gadot, Fechad Chatzirot, Fechad Karbefo. Right? So all of the various roofs, courtyards, and the forbidden spaces that are based in the storage areas, again, that have a carmelite typically, that's the carpet, they're all considered to be one area in terms of the they're all considered to be one united area for any utensils that happen to have been left in them on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Asada eno vayru, and Gerbon, and we say that in the field is good, according to the Chachamim. We say that the problem with the field outside is that it's a carmelite, right? So if you find it outside the city, it's always in a carmelite, therefore you're unable to carry it, even on whether it be Shabbos or Yom Tov, and then therefore, because again, on Shabbos is because, well, it's a, it should be problem carrying, and on Yom Tov, you have the issue of being able to walk towards it. So, Rabbi Rav Yosef, Dharma Tervayu, Hachod Migdal Shal Eitzah Skinan, Demar Savar, Klihu, the Ein Binyan, Bekelem Insir, Bekelem Mar Savar, Ohalu. So the Rabbi Rav Yosef have a different argument. The question is, we're talking about our little cupboard. Let's see, is that, yeah, our cupboard we had up here. Right, so this guy, so the question is, what's it made out of? It's basically, this thing is made out of wood. And the question is, if it's made out of wood, does it have the status of a utensil, or does it have the status of something else? So, right, that being, it's actually a structure, it's a tent, right? If it's simply, you know, a kli, you can destroy a kli on Shabbos, and that's why it's okay. But if it's a tent, then there's a problem destroying the tent. So, v'fluta d'hai tanai, it's actually a machloke tanaim, the Don has learned the Mishnah, higish al gabe shida teva migdal tmei, that the Zav had knocked into a carriage, a crate, or a cupboard, then whatever is inside is impure because he caused them to move when he hit them. Rishim won't say that they are not tahor when that happens. My love, comment, so what are they arguing about that could happen? Mar Savar Klihu, Mar Savar Olu. No, what's the argument? It's not the question of. Really, it's not based on whether or not he moved it or not. The question is was this item inside considered to be able to become tamei by the touching of the zav? If it's a kli, it could not be. It could become tamei, but if it's considered to be an ohel, right? So just because a zav touches your house doesn't make your house tamei. Omar Abaye, which is bra. So, and Abaye says, what do you think is a reasonable explanation for this? Yeah. Right, v'hat tanya ohel v'nise tamei kli v'inonise tohar. What do you mean? How's that possible? Didn't we say that if you shook an actual tent and you moved it, that the zav can make it tame? But let's say if you had a kli, and then the zav hit into it, but it didn't move, right? Because it was, you know, too big, or didn't hit hard enough. Then it's tahor, which implies that the issue isn't the touching; it's the issue is the fact that the item moved. And then it says if they were moved they're tamei zeklal they say machmat kochol tamei machmat radator, and we determine that what's the main problem is when a zav is matame something, right? When a zav is being, right, because a zav is one of the avodah tuma, right? It's one of the sources of tuma that makes everything impure. So but it's limited in its ability to make things impure. You know, only if something is movable. But if the thing is not able to be moved, or if it only moved because of indirect contact, let's say if you're on a rickety floor and then the zav walks by and then you see the item shaking a little bit, so that wouldn't be a problem as long as he didn't directly touch it and make it move. The shaking of the floor is not considered to be sufficient direct force to become tame the item. So El Alma Rabaye, Dukulin Alma, Hesi, Amath Mat Kocho Tame. So rather everything follows Rabaye, who says that if it moves based on his actions, it's considered to be Tame. Nachman Rada, but if it moves only based on the vibrations, it's Tahor, then it's remains pure. Bahakabir Ada Mahma Kocho Askina. So rather what's the case here is where it shakes as a result of his direct action. So the question here is where he moves something else, and that's what caused the shaking. And the question is that considered to be sufficient moving for the purpose of making something tame from the zav? That's the question. So So then, what's the Mishnah talking about in regards to the air that we quoted? So Abaye and Rava, the Rajavayu, Bimanul, Bakatir, Bimatan, Askinan, Abaye, Sakina, Bimatuke. So what is the case of whether they're being no good? And what type of lock is it? It's a lock that's attached with a leather knife, with leather. Wait, let's take out the photo. Okay, so here, where's that? Here we go. Everybody can see the type of lock we have here. So it's not one of those really, you know, strong metal locks, or even one of the, rather, what is it? It's one of these locks that's actually what holds it in place is a piece of leather. And what allows you to cut it is you need a knife in order to cut it. So then it's not the case where it's completely accessible and you can't find the key, you're not getting in there anytime soon, or you have to do other real lock in order to get it. Rather, all you need to do is a knife in order to cut through it. The Tanakama Sabra La Kermio, Sid Amar, Kol Kim Talima Shabbat, Flutzi Masar, Gadol, Beate, Shalom Risha. So the first Tana, who says that this isn't a problem, would hold that Rabbi Yossi says that all utensils may be moved on Shabbos except for a large saw, blade, and plow, because those are considered to be, no matter what, muksa and unusable. But on the other hand, a knife, right, could be used to cut this item, and therefore you could easily get your ear out of it, and because it's not a problem interacting with this type of to break this type of lock. Rabbi Elazar Savar, Rabbi Nechemia, Damar, Afilu Talit, Afilu Tarvod, Ein Talit, El Tzar Tashmishan. But the other opinion has a different opinion in regards to muksa. He says that even a cloak or even a spoon are only allowed, which are only, gives a little bit of background just by this one a bit more. So what is the different types of muksa? So there's muksa, machmat iser, right? There's an item that is considered to be muksa and forbidden for use on Shabbos because it's designated in first purpose. It's only for forbidden purposes. Then there's the shemato, iser, leheter, item that can be used for permitted purposes as well as for forbidden purposes, such as a knife. And then there's also, so those are items. So that's what we're talking about. And then the third one is, that it's muksa because it's so valuable that you wouldn't ever use it for anything else. So we're talking about the interim case of something that's something that you could be used, right, whether for a law purpose or a dislaw purpose. But the question is what you have in mind for that set purpose for Shabbos, and as well as what you're using for now. And we say that you're only allowed to use said item, according to Rabbi Nechemia. The only way you can use a item that is one of the types of muksa is if you had it designated for an allowed purpose. And if it's not for its own purpose, it's for its ordinary use, then that you normally use it for, then you can't use it. So unless you happen to have this knife, it's always used for cut, unless you happen to be a very interesting type of thief who is always using their knife specifically to cut open people's leather locks. Unless that's your vocation, your normal usage of the knife, that's not going to work. So therefore, you're not allowed to actually access and get into the cupboard, even though it's entirely within your capabilities to do so. Okay. So now we're going to move to another type of case, that of we're talking about when the item has now moved outside of the tefillah. So here the problem isn't that it is it's physically inaccessible, it's that it's halakhically inaccessible to you. So some of these are ones that are physically accessible. So we'll go through it together, so let's discuss them. So the mission says, it galgal chuslatzum, nafala lav gal on israf, truma v'nit meit mebodyom, ein way ruv. So if you had, it was a nice round roll, and it rolled outside of the city limits, or if it was covered up by a pile of rubble, or if it was burnt to pieces, or if your air was made up of truma and then it became tameh, all this happened before Shabbos happens. You don't have an air. But if this happened on Shabbos, that a strong wind came and blew away the air, or something got covered by a pile of stones, or burned up, or became a food that needs to be burnt, which is the case of truma that became that became impure. So we would say that that is, that if it's before, the question is outside of Shabbos, what was it? Was it accessible and therefore, and usable, therefore you have a valid heir, or is it not, in which case you don't have an heir? So that imsafek, if you're not sure what time it happened, on Shabbos or before Shabbos, that became inaccessible. So Remeir, Rabbi Yehuda Omrim, Harei Zech Amargama. So Rabbi Yehuda said that if you don't know, you're both a donkey driver as well as a horse driver. So the difference between these two animals is the way that you lead them. Basically, you're supposed to donkey and a cattle driver. So a donkey driver you push from behind, and a cattle driver lifts from the front. So basically, if you're trying to do both at the same time, you will wind up in a very uncomfortable position of being stuck between the hindquarters as well as the mouth of two animals, which is not a pleasant position to be in, because you're being pulled. Basically, it's you're being pulled in two directions, or the modern idiom would be between stuck between a rock and a hard place. Basically, you're stuck. So that happens. Basically, you have to react as familiarly as possible, as if you don't have, as if the heir was not done properly. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say, Omrim Safek Eruv Kasher. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say that if it's in doubt, then we say that it's a valid heir. Rabbi Yossi, Avtumos Hegid Mishum Chamishas Game Al Safek Eruv Shakasher. So, all right. So, after Riosa Rishon said their point. Riosa says, I have stronger proof. Otolmos testified that there was about five other elders that an eruv that's in doubt is a valid eruv. So now we're going to go and analyze each part of the Mishnah. That's what exactly is going to happen and why it's no good. So, it galgal tosafom. So, the roll beyond the Shabbat limit. Amar Rava, lo shenu el shen gagal chutz arba amot. Val tuch arba amot, no shen iravo, yesh lo arba amot. So Rava says, this is only the case if your eruv was more than 4 amot outside of the eruv. But if it was within the 4 amot of the eruv, of the tchum of the eruv, then it would still be fine because you get the 4 amot around and therefore it can go head into the actual tchum. So therefore that'd be fine. The issue is when it's beyond even that 4 amot buffer space. First, that's how that works and why. We'll hopefully get into more details when we get to later on the Masacha when we deal more with the specifics of how tchum work. Okay, Nafal of Gal, when a pile of stones fell upon it. Chazav died to the Ibai Masi Shakile. So you may have thought that this is for the case where the Erev is actually accessible, where you actually could have access to it. So the answer is though that's not really the case because if that was the case then it's not really then. Again, that means it is accessible, not that it's inaccessible. So, Lema, Mandate, and Bullock, Krebby. So, what are we going to say? How are we going to explain the fact that, you know, what exactly the case is of the rocks falling down on top of it? So, we're going to say it's not like Krebby. Because what does Krebby, say? Koldavar, Shumash, Shumash, Foot, Lob, Gozer, Allah, Benesh, Masha. So, this isn't according to Krebby. It says that anything that is Aser, Mirabanan, is only a problem, is not a problem during Benesh, Masha. So, this means that the way that the rocks that had been deemed inaccessible has to have been inaccessible by a deraita fashion. Right, not just that, oh, I can't move the rock because this rock is muksan, but it's like really right there. But no, it means like actually there's no way of your having access to the eruv, not that I could have violated Nishan Durbana in order to get it free. No, it means there's absolutely no way that you could get to it. And as far as way that you could move stones. So the ways to move stones are either you have to dive into them in advance on Shabbos. If you have your Shabbos stones, if you wanted to throw people or play or use the different rates, you have to dive into them before Shabbos. Or there is the heter of using three stones if you had to go to the bathroom. Because back then they didn't have toilet paper, they used to wipe using stones. But again, that wouldn't really help you in terms of if a giant pile of rubble fell on top of your A roof. Those three stones would be nowhere near sufficient in order to actually solve your problem of A roof in this case and your access to it. So if you look at him, so I already said another option. If you look at him with Karebi, even if Karebi says that it's that your abundance don't apply during Ben Hashmasha, well, it's true. I know we still need to state it. Why? Because what's the case? In order to get out of it, in order to get the Arab out, you need to take an actual kli, a hoe or a spade, to move in. Therefore, it would be us from Daraita, not only your abundance, to access it. So even according to review, who's Rosavanian, this could still be problematic. With Srifi. And we need both the first statement about rolling out of the Arab as well as the covered by. Why? The E Tanigal Nidgalgal Mishum Letagabe. If you said only because it rolled out, you may have thought the problem is that it's not near you. But if you had it next to you, but simply inaccessible because of the pile of stones on it, you may have said that's fine. If you said the problem is because it was covered by stones, you said the issue is that it's covered, you don't see it. But by the case where it rolled away, just like you know, it happened to have rolled away probably by a gust of wind. So now too, the same thing can happen now, that the wind will blow it right back to you, and then you'll be fine. But, so there's still the difference in both. The issue that the problem is the fact that it's currently inaccessible, even, and we're not, hoping for some extremely unlikely circumstance of it suddenly being accessible again. But, as in, we're not worried about, the wind blowing it back, or of, your pile of stones magically disappearing, or that, your nice, non-dream neighbor decided, oh, this is I'd like to use these stones to build my house now. That's not a reasonable something to have. That's going to happen. Rather, if it's not accessible, it's not accessible. So, on Yisraf, Truma Nidme. So, they're talking about the case of if it had been burnt or if it was Truma and then became impure. So, Lamali, why do we need to have both if it was burnt or if it was Truma and became impure? Tanan Yisraf, Lodiyaka Kokoda Rav Yossi. The teaching of the being burnt is due to the strength of Rav Yossi. Tana Truma Nidme, Lodiyaka Kokoda Rav Meir. So the first part is to teach you how the strength of Rabbi Yossi's opinion, where he says in the Mishnah that suffix would then be allowed, and similarly by Truma Nidme, the father of Meir's opinion, that even though the Truma is still there, he applies it then even if there's only uncertainty about the timing. Right, and one question is the uncertainty of can you check if this happens that or not? There's also the question of is this item a first question of timing is also up for debate here. So several mayor Svekel Somra says, and wait, do you mean to be saying that Remeir holds that in the case of doubt one has to be stringent? Hatanan, Tamesha Radipol, Savek Taval Sadek Lo Taval, Bafilu Taval, Savek Taval Barbaim Sa, Sadek Lo Taval Barbaim Sa. Okay, so that's a lot to unpack. Let's explain it. So basically, we're talking about somebody who's going to the mikvah. There's all these different types of doubts of whether or not he did everything properly. So the question is, you can't remember, did he go or didn't he go? Was there enough water in the mikvah? If there was two mikvah, one of which is kosher, one of which is because it has the right amount of water, one of which doesn't have the right amount of water, right? And all these things, you don't know which one you had done. You're in the case of safek. We say that it's tameh. That's the first page of the Mishnah. We have more in betumah kamura. What is this? What is this stated? This is said when you have become tameh from an astringent truma, which in this we're talking about truma, which is astringent truma, we're referring to an avodah truma, the sources of truma, such as a dead body, or from a zav or a zava. For more on sources of truma, tara, that's the santara. Now, I'll explain as necessary for to understand this, but as far as the full Din of Tumatara, will be treated at another point. Yeah, Val Tuma Kala, but what about if it's more lenient, such as those that are Durabanan, then what? Because it means you're right, that you only have the Avatuma, then what? The Avatuma is the Tame, right? But as far as getting to secondary and third degree Tumas, right, so that is only from rabbinic enactment, so that would be considered to be the lesser form of Tumah. So Tumah Kala, and now some examples. Kagon, Sh'akal, Ochalin, Tmein, Vashata, Mashkin, Tmein. First, if you'd eaten food that had become impure, or drinking a beverage that was Tamei. Habar, Roshav, Ruba, B'man, Shavim. If you had dumped in a, with your head under your body in water that was invalid for a mikvah. Oh, Shanafel, Roshel, Valrabo, Shoshal, Lugin, Mayim, Shovim. Or if you'd had on your body it fallen three log of water that has been moved, meaning water that's no good for a mikvah. The Yarad, Vatavah. And then, after all these things, you went down to go to the mikvah. Safek Taval, Safek Lo Taval. Question, did you or didn't you properly do your tefillah? Mafilu, Taval, Safek Taval, Barbinsah, Safek Taval, Lo Barbinsah. That was the question of the, was there 40 sa'ah, was there proper volume of water in the mikvah? Or in the case, where there are 40, there's one that has 40, someone doesn't have 40 sa'ah. Tavo chamen v'eino de v'ezamen tabal, sekador. Or the cases where you went to a place, one that has and one that doesn't have, and you're not sure where you went to. Again, we say, as opposed to before we said, sveko tamei, here we say, sveko tahor. Right? Where, again, all these different cases of doubt, here we say that actually we consider you to be tahor. So that's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yossi Mitamei. So Rabbi Yossi says that actually it makes you, that you should be Tamei in both cases because Safek, Toma, or Lechomra. So then the question is, so that's Rabbi Yossi's opinion. So that's why he says he's a Safek, Lechomra. That's what he says. By Toma, and even in the cases of the Durbanans, he's simply Machmer. So, but what about Rabbi Meir? Does Rabbi Meir agree with Rabbi Yossi or not? If he agrees with Tanakhama, so there's different rights and Durabanan. So, think, then how does that relate to our case of Tchumen? So, because Rabbi Meir, Tchumen to right to Nehu. Rather, what must you say? That after Rabbi Meir also forbid it, is that Rabbi Meir says, Tchumen is me to Oraita. Right? So, since Tchumen are me to Oraita, the Easter of going 2,000 Amot outside of your residence is considered to be Isra Doraita, and therefore, when there's a doubt about Tchumen, about the distance you should be going, or anything else related to Isra Tchuman Chav as opposed to Isra Irvin or Isra Hotzah, but Tchumen specifically, he thinks it's Doraita. Everybody also, on the side of Hotzah, everybody also says that that Hotzah is also made Doraita. As far as between different eras, that's the point of the Rabbanan. But in general, there is an Isra Doraita Hotzah. The question is a debate though about is Isra Tchumen Doraita Rabbanan, which we have addressed more in depth prior. But for now, now the Gemara here is going to, this is one of the Gemara is important to know in terms of whether or not Tchumen is actually Doraita Rabbanan. So Stavar Rabbi Meir, Tchumen Doraita. Do we really think that Rabbi Meir thinks that Tchumen is Doraita? Hatanan, imyakol avlio. So, are you really going to say that Rameyer thinks that Tchumen are usher midoraita? But didn't we learn that when we're doing, is it all, this is again, this is a more later on, I'm talking about how we measure the Tchum. So, so we measure the Tchum and you hit a mountain. The question is, how do you deal with measuring the mountain? Right? How do you, or you have a deep belt, like how do you deal with measuring it? So, in that Mishnah, it says if you can't measure it the way you normally would with a 50 meter rope, which is how you'd measure it, a normal distance of incline. So, right? So, what do you say? So Zomar Biustai Bar Yanai Meshuba Bimeir, Shamachi Shimakadrim Bahari. So Rabbi said to Mayor, I heard that if it's too steep, we pierce through the mountains. Meaning we don't go up and measure it, actually, we simply go right on through. Basically, we measure how wide the mountain is, and then we flatten it, right? We ignore differences in topography, and we say that it's fine now. So we just pretend that it's flat, right? You take the bird's eye view, and you know you ignore the fact that there's a difference in depth as far when you're measuring. But normally, where you would deal with it by having multiple measure with ropes. But here, right, you know, it's too steep. So he's saying it's too steep, then you know what? Just treat it if it's flat and go right on through. So the Esau Tchuma Doraita Mimikadrin. And if you really thought the Tchuma was Doraita, who are you to say that you can, you know, magically flatten and cut and pierce through all of these mountains? The Hamar of Nachman Amaraba. Rabba Baragua. Didn't Rav Nachman say the name of Rabba, the son of Agua? In a kadrin lob arimikla, lob agua rufa, mibneshe, tell Torah. With the statement of Rav Nachman, quoting the name of Rabba Baragua, that we don't let you do the piercing of mountains, right, and ignoring topographical features, not for the case of an arimikla, when we're measuring out the distance surrounding a city of refuge. Because the area around the city of refuge is the area that the person who had killed somebody accidentally is allowed to flee to and be protected there. So we don't skimp out and do approximations or flattening or magical flattenings for them. Lo Begla Rufa, now we're measuring which city is closest, see which one is supposed to do perform the rite of the Egla Rufa, cutting off the head of the calf as the elders of that city proclaim that it's not their fault that the person who was found in the field dead is their responsibility. So in both these cases, which are both midoraita, so in these cases, we don't let you do the piercing through mountains or flattening the topographical features. We make you actively measure it. So, seemingly, there's only two examples of things that are made to oraita, that we have an issue of, that we won't let you be mukader, which applies to everything else, that you are being able to mukader through, must be to meet your abanan. So if you're allowing them to be mukader and pierce on through for measure the Erev, you must hold the Erev Tchumen, and the entirety of the Isra Tchumen on Shabbos, right, for prohibition of going outside your boundary, it must be only to abanan, not to oraita. No. Lo kasha, hadidei, hadirabe. No, we can sell this differently. We say that the question of whether or not the Shlom is midoraita derabanan, one is his statement, right? So, and one is his teacher's statement. So that's how you can work out how one case is mach and one case is makel. Because in one case, he's quoting that it's deoraita, which is his opinion. Right, and then the case for his makel, and looks like he's made a rabbanon, it's because that's not his teaching. That's his point of what his teacher taught you, but he himself believes differently. Dekanami, Diktani, and you could also infer it from another version of the statement that we had, that Bezoamar, Rabbi Dustai, Barat Yanai, Meshum Rimeir. This was said by Rabbi Dustai, son of Yanai, the name of Rimeir. Shemati Shemakadrin Baharin, who says that you are allowed to pierce mountains. Right, so Shemina. Because in that formulation, close to the above one, he's not saying that Makadrin Baharin, he's saying, I've heard that there is those who pierce through mountains. So that Shemua that we're talking about there, that thing that he had heard, is what he heard from his Rebbe, but it's not what he actually thinks is the proper thing to be doing. So Urami deoraita on deoraita the mayor. Wait, so then there's still a problem between two different isurami deoraita in regards to Rameir's opinion. So what are these two problems we have? So these two problems we have are we're going to see from somewhere else. So now we're going to, so what is the contradiction? If we dealt with the issue of appears to be mountains. What's next? Naga, Bashad, Belailov, Ani, Adea, Im, Chai, Imate. Ulamachar, Hishki, and Musa, Ome. So, if somebody in the middle of the night, back, you know, in pre-modern times when it was night, and assuming it wasn't, you know, with a full moon, it was pretty much pitch black. So, he touched somebody in the night, and you don't know who you touched. You don't know if the person's alive or dead. When you touch them the next day, you wake up and you find that the person next to you is dead. So, Remeir, Matayar, Chamer, Tamin, Shakol, Atumot, Kish'at, Nesiatan. So, in this case, where you touch somebody in the night, you're not sure if they're alive or dead, in the morning, you wake up and you know that the person is dead. The question is, when you touch them, were they alive or dead? This is a very weird case, agreed. Again, this is also assuming that they're sleeping outside, because if they were underneath a covering, then he would be tame either way because of Tumat Oel. Right, because if a dead body is underneath a roof, then we say that everything underneath that same roof is also considered to be impure. So again, so it must be outside if this is happening. And then the question is, did he touch? The only question is, did he touch him or not? And Remeir said that he is tahor, and Chama say he's tamei. And right, so why does Chama say that he is tamei? Because you say that that you view all the items as you see them now. And that's what would generate our issues. So again, so now comparing this back over to our case. So it appears that Remeir is being lenient, even though we're dealing with the case of Tuma, which is Deoraita, because we're talking about Tuma Chamura, a very stringent type of Tuma that comes from a dead body, which is Deoraita, the fact that you become impure. Yet he's saying, if it's in doubt, you are tahor. The ones who are saying that you'll become tamei, that implies that if it's in doubt, you are for a deoraita, you are tamei, which again implies the problem that Remeir seems to be holding, that by that certain things are by cases of doubt, we are that by a deoraita, we are even in subject to deoraita, we're being mitahir, we're saying that you're pure. Which is a problem, because the other cases of Aravin, he doesn't seem to say that. So the question is, how does he work that out with deoraitas and in cases of doubt? So Rabbi Yirmiya, Mishnatenu, Shahaya, Aleh, Asheret, Kol Ben Hashmasha. So Remeir says, what's the case? Is where you must have had to have an impure sheret, which is a impure creeping animal, on it the entirety of the time of twilight, and the entirety of the time when it's in doubt. Wait, but then, so that itself, Rabbi Meir's opinion, but that would lead us to an issue of Rabbi Yossi then, because what do you mean by safek eruv? It's definitively no good then, because it's been covered the entirety of the time of twilight. So, Rabbah or Rav Yosef to Amit Ravai, rather according to Rabbah and Rav Yosef, and both of them say, Haka b'shtei kite idim askina. Now there's two witnesses. We can testify about his status. Achad omer mibod yom nitma, v'achad omer mishma sheicha. So the two witnesses, one say that he became tame before when it was still day. The other one says he became tame only after nightfall. Right, I mean the truma only came to me after my nightfall. So how would that help us? So basically, the problem with creating suffix truma is a lot of times is that like it's something that in theory you could end up explaining. So what's the way that we're going to construct here? We're saying that how do we create a true case of something where we absolutely have no idea? Is we have two sets of Adam testifying, creating halachic reality simultaneously. So whatever the actual reality is, obviously only one of them could have happened, right? Either it happened before it was dark or after it was dark. The problem is that we have two testimonies which have halachic weight, right? Which have metaphysical effect. and they're in conflict. So therefore, we really have a true case of doubt. Is it A or is it B? So not only is it a doubt of, you know, did A happen or did B happen? It's a, we have even a stronger case of doubt of A versus B. And Rava Amar, Trecheske Lakula, Vacha, Chada Chazaka Lakula. No, so Rava says, no, that's not the way we don't solve by trying to figure out how whether there's one case or two cases of doubt. Rather, if in case of any doubt, we're not going to try and construct that case. Rather, the question is how many ways do we have, in the case of Safek, how many ways do we have to make out? So, one case, there is two presumptions, right? The person who's touched the person is dead. If one question is did you actually touch that person? And was the person dead at said time? That's two questions, right? So in both those things, if they were ruled in your favor, you would become tahor. But haza chada chazak lakol. Here there's only one case. So the question of, right, when did the truma become tameh? So therefore, that would be the problem. So therefore, Remeir is makel. There's two cases of support to be made, to be lakula, but with only one, that's when he would not. And that's how we can solve his seeming inconsistency, is that it's not based on his being insistent about how to treat a suffix midoraita. Rather, there's a question of how many areas for leniency and how many tzadahakels do you have in this case. Okay, so now let's double and back and do some review. We've got about a minute and a half, so let's sum up what we've been talking about, because there was a lot of topics touched on today, so this way we can hopefully have a better understanding as we move forward. So again, we started talking about the case of accessibility, we started with the permission on the previous Amud, talking about if you had lost the key or not, and the question is, how accessible is it? Is it in the town? Is it not in the town? I mean, including that. And then it actually comes down to the question in Hilchot Mitzvah, it's a very limited case of can you or can't you break apart the area that's there in a lot of fashion. If you can, then you're in the clear. If you can't, then it's problematic. Next, we have, and then after we debated that, we started talking about if it had rolled outside of the tomb, or if it had been covered, and again, whether or not the degree of it's being inaccessible, that had to be beyond a certain point, and also that it has to be completely inaccessible, even midoraita, in order for everybody to agree that this is problematic. And then we talk about case versus burnt or becomes tamei. So we've dealt with a lot of questions of how does tumah work, midoraita or midrabbana, which one are we dealing with, as well as dealing with the question of timing, as whether it's before or after, and we haven't quite finished the entirety of the Mishnah yet. There still are some aspects to do, and then we continue talking about within the question cases of doubt of deraita versus derabanan, and what do you do in the cases of doubt, as well as supports in both directions based on chuma and also based on other parts of the Erevin to figure out is chuma midaraita midarabanan according to Remeir's opinion. In the end, we didn't quite conclude. It appears that Remeir still holds that Tchumen is midoraita, or Dereyasu would hold that not. But the question is, how do you deal with cases of doubt? And we concluded that we had Rose's conclusion that the way that you deal with the cases of doubt is not by trying to establish the level, like, you know, is it deraita or midrabanan. Rather, we're leaving the subject as it is, whether it be deraita or midrabanan. And the only question is, how many degrees of doubt do you have? You have two reasons to be makel, two tzadim lahakel, two reasons to help you and make it tar, then we'll rely upon it. But if there's only one, then that's where it's problematic, and we will not allow you to rely on simply one down. Okay, so that's it for today. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask them. And if anybody has to go, well, you're welcome to head out. And hopefully I'll see everybody tomorrow at the same time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
My pleasure, everybody.
That's it.